Hello, you're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's Wednesday the 8th of April 2009, and I'm your host, Hereward Fenton. Tonight, we have major breaking stories from around the globe. First off, traces of explosives found in 9/11 dust. A major new paper has been published in a peer-reviewed journal confirming that tiny red and grey chips found from the dust from the collapse of the World Trade Center contain highly explosive materials. This is an important breakthrough for the forensic investigation of the World Trade Center collapses and really pushes the whole 9/11 investigation to a new level. Another major breaking story which we're going to bring to you tonight: David Icke stopped at Melbourne Immigration and told he must pass character test and not incite discord in Australia. This is a story that has just come out and we're going to be covering it as we have details to hand. I have some information and we'll be keeping you up to date. More stories from tonight. We're also going to be looking at the incredible announcement in today's media that the government, the federal Australian government, is pouring $43 billion into a massive restructuring of our entire internet. They're talking about rebuilding the connections of broadband all the way to your home. Everything's going to be stripped out and rebuilt. It's been compared already to the Snowy Mountains hydro scheme in its scope. An extraordinary development. We're also going to be covering tonight the Glenn Beck FEMA camp saga, fiasco, call it what you will. There's been an enormous amount of information and discussion on the internet about this. We're going to be playing you a few clips and hopefully allow you to make up your own mind as to what the truth and lies in that whole story are. Now, without further ado, I would like to continue with tonight's show. And we'll begin by joining up with our frequent guest and colleague, Josh Jackson. Hello, Josh Jackson. Welcome to Truth News Radio.
Thank you.
Josh, tonight is a momentous night. We've got so much to get through and we've got very little time to get through it. I'm just going to lead with the breaking news story that we have here on the wires. David Icke stopped at Melbourne Immigration and told he must pass character test and not incite discord in Australia.
Huge.
And yes, I mean, we'll try and get some comment and discussion going here. I'll just read to you what I currently have to hand. This is from davidicke.com, Tuesday, April 7, 2009. And that's probably Tuesday being Tuesday UK time. I'd imagine this is actually very, very current. I'd say this is actually probably tonight, Australian time. So, okay, I'll just read to you what I've got here. And I think this is probably a from David Icke's personal blog.
Yeah.
I have, shall we say, a pretty good idea who is behind the unbelievable nonsense that insists that a man arriving in Australia to say that we must love each other no matter what our beliefs, race, politics, or income bracket has to pass a character test or be banned from speaking to a public audience.
Mm.
The document said that the Australian government supports freedom of speech, but of course it doesn't, because it only supports the freedom to speak within the bounds that it sets. This is not freedom of speech at all, but only the freedom to speak within the bounds dictated by the government. The document says, Section 501 of the Migration Act 1958, the Act, provides a discretionary power to refuse to grant or to cancel a visa if a non-citizen does not meet the requirements of the character test, in quotes. A non-citizen will not meet the requirements of the character test if, among other things, there is a significant risk that they will vilify, incite discord in, or represent a danger to, the Australian community or a segment of the Australian community. When I arrived at the immigration desk at Melbourne Airport, I was amazed at how quickly the lady stamped my passport without asking any questions. But the reason became clear, as she handed my documents to a guy behind her and not to me. "Could you please go with this man, sir?" are words I have heard many times, especially in Canada. And the immigration gentleman was clearly waiting for me, not least because he knew my name without looking at the documents. He then led me to another lady who took me into a bright, white, Agent Smith-type room. I must stress, however, that everyone was extremely pleasant and courteous, and I have no problem with these people at all. They were just doing what they were told to do. I was handed the document below and asked to sign it if I was going to be allowed into the country. I did so because I have no intention of vilifying anyone in Australia and because my signature was only related to confirming that I had read the document, not that I agreed with it. I said to the lady that I had come to Australia to say that if we are going to sort out this crazy world, we have to love each other, irrespective of our differences. She seemed embarrassed and said she knew nothing of what I was saying. The people with the biggest problem are those individuals and the groups they represent who are so full of their sense of superiority and so full of fear that they feel the need to dictate what others can and cannot say. Okay, I'm just basically reading to you from this document. And I'm as new to it as you are, and audience, please understand, this is not information I had prior to the beginning of the show. This is late breaking. Very late breaking news. Now, it looks to me as if Mr. Ike was put through a little bit of a processing session there. Sounds from reading it that he did get through that. It doesn't sound like he was arrested, so we can all heave a big sigh of relief.
This is just more tactics to sort of threaten and make people feel like, because people read this then and they feel, maybe I shouldn't get into this sort of stuff because, you know,
no doubt
I might be arrested at the airport, I might be questioned. And, you know, again, it's to make you feel anything that you question, anything you do, or, you know, I mean, just the fact that you can't even have a bottle of milk on the plane anymore, you know. No doubt.
And you know, as is well known, I'm not a huge fan of David Icke, but I will defend to the death his right to come here and say whatever he wants, okay? There's two completely separate issues here. One is my views about David Icke. I think he's a lunatic, and I think he talks a lot of nonsense, and possibly he's a con man. Okay, that's actually what I think. However, he is perfectly entitled to come here and say whatever he wants.
Absolutely.
Because that is the essence of freedom, okay? And I will uphold those two pillars of my thinking to the end of time, okay, relation to anyone. And there's very little that I will say, that there are very few circumstances where I'd say that is ever legitimate to silence someone because you don't like what they're saying. I mean, even then I can say, yes, there are probably situations where you might need to do that. Okay. I mean, I'm not going to be an absolutist or a fanatic either. I think
the freedom to say anything you like is countered by the freedoms anyone else has to argue your point.
Indeed.
You know, if you say something negative about someone, the freedom of our society is that someone can go along and try to rebut you.
Rebut you, yes, indeed. I mean, if someone turned up in Australia who wanted to give lectures about the joys of pedophilia, that's an obnoxious and horrendous thing. However, if someone wanted to do that, and there were, say, 1,000 people who wanted to go to that conference, it's not up to me to say that person should be stopped at the airport. And I'm not even claiming that David Icke is
an extreme argument.
Well, it's not up to me to say that such and such a person should be persecuted for having a certain view. That's all I'm trying. That's my bottom line here. Okay.
Well, he should be persecuted by the people who can talk back and try to rebut his, his talkings or his teachings and shame him and, you know, not go to his conferences and, you know, stop bankrolling his filth. I mean, that's basically what it comes down to, is that freedom to say whatever you want comes with the freedom to argue against him or her. And you know, this is the fantastic thing of life. And, you know, I mean, here we are talking about the sickest side of things, but this whole concept of freedom of speech comes from scientists who, you know, said that the world was round instead of flat and was were killed for that sort of talk against the church. This is where upholding these freedoms to say whatever you want are so important, because sometimes dogma can get so strong that we will just never listen and never move forward as a society.
Sick of the lies, deception, spin and half-truths? Well, so are we. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. Tune in every week at truthnews.com.au or subscribe to the podcast with iTunes or your favourite podcatcher.
Josh Jackson, look.
Yes, Harrowood.
Look, as I was saying, Mr. Icke, you know, is not a man that I have a huge amount of, I guess, worship for, as some do in this country.
Oh, look, I like some of the stuff he says.
Well, good on you, and good on you for that.
All this stuff, and you know, I think he's got his part to play, he's generally a freedom loving man, so you know, good on him.
Look, he's a sterling lad, as someone characterized him. Okay, and he's an ex football player. Okay,
yeah,
and he's not a super intellect. He's not a rocket scientist, and he's certainly not a scholar. Okay,
he holds himself well.
Oh, look, I'm sure he's very, very good in all kinds of social situations. That's why I'm a little bit skeptical of the man. However, let's not go down that path. All I'm saying is he's here in Australia. Good on him.
Let him talk.
He wants to talk to the populace. He knows it's George Orwell. Okay. You know, and he knows that 2 + 2 = 4. I'll ride with that, okay? And I'll defend him against any kind of outrage of character assassination. But it looks to me that he's currently okay. You know, he was harassed a bit at the airport, probably because the immigration department knows that he's here to give lectures and they know that he's part of something which is somewhat anti-establishment, okay? And I'm sure they do that to every single person who comes here to, questions. Well, I'm sure it's very standard, I'd say.
The border security is a brand, and they like advertising. I mean, that's why they have all these shows on television about border security to, you know, make everyone feel all warm and fuzzy and scared. But this is, again, just another little marketing exercise for that arm of the government. You know, oh, look, we got David. They knew it would cause a little bit of outrage within our little circles. I mean, it's just more conditioning. Honestly, that's the way I see it. More conditioning for him, but also the news readers
and also
his blogs and stuff.
Also, you've got to realize that our society runs on very, very tight niches. The people who are aware of David Icke, there are a lot of them, but they are a tiny minority within our society. And they are also quite separate from, say, the people who are involved in anti-globalization protests. They are another, small niche group. People involved in socialist revolutionary groups, again, another niche group. But this is part of, and I really like to, you know, get into this question of why it is that we are, as a society, always split off into tiny little groups that, even though they have thousands of members, are sort of almost hidden from the reality of most people.
Yeah, it's phenomenal, isn't it?
And are all sort of separate from each other. And so the average person who just gets up and goes to work and sort of is a little bit lazy and, you know, can't really be bothered getting involved in some kind of activism doesn't even know that this exists.
It's because they'd rather watch Two and a Half Men and sit there mind-numbed and watch the sport and see that the Seagulls are really losing this season. You know, really, like, not one game.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They'd you know, this is the sort of mindset that people get into. They don't want to think about big events. Now, what does sometimes happen is when people start not being able to eat and losing their jobs, that's when people start thinking a little bit more. That's when people start questioning. That's when people start getting a bit angry. And what we're seeing now with this global economic crisis is that people are starting to get a little bit antsy, starting to wake up a little bit.
Yes, and I think that's one of the results of that is that all of the activist groups all over the world, in every sphere, are getting an injection of energy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whether it's, you know, David Icke, Greenpeace, We Are Change, anti-globalization, the Zeitgeist movement, it's all waking up, you know, and it's like, it's because, yeah, there's a time of crisis, which is giving people an incentive to talk about stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a lot of people are very closet revolutionaries or conspiracy theorists or put the dot together. Now, when I say conspiracy theorists, I don't mean that they know that other stuff's going on. They know that the Australian Army is just protecting bumper crops in Afghanistan, heroin crops. You know, they know that dodgy stuff's happening. It's really, I think, but they still have this thing of, let's just watch telly. I don't want to. Ooh, that's heavy. Ooh, you know, I talk to a lot of people at lunch, you know, they go, ooh, Josh, he's a bit heavy, you know, he's always talking about heavy stuff. Like I said before, with the loss of jobs, with food starting to become, the plate starting to become less plentiful, people are starting to want to talk a bit more heavy. They want answers. And the closet, put the dots together guy in all of us is starting to come out a bit.
Yeah, and this question of, like, you know, people feeling that their lives are comfortable enough that they don't need to sort of engage with these questions is one that, you know, that people need to look at the bigger picture to see that if they feel that their life is comfortable enough that they don't need to look at difficult questions, then they've got a moral problem they need to confront inside themselves. Because either, the way I see it, either you're in a relatively privileged position, in which case you've got a moral question you need to consider, or you're one of the disenfranchised, right, in which you've got every reason to be very, very angry and very, you know, concerned and want change, okay? But, you know, people who are doing okay, sure, they've got an argument. They can say, well, I'm doing okay, you know.
Mm.
But they need to really think about their moral universe. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, here we are living in a country where we have a fairly abundant source of food and water, clean drinking water and stuff like that. You know, but we have other countries in the world where people are just suffering, you know, extreme conditions, you know, and we're even militarily engaged. You know, we've actually, our taxpayer dollars have gone towards, you know, blowing up, you know, villages in Afghanistan, killing women
farmers
and children, you know, you know, boiling babies alive. You know, I mean, I just want to make this graphic, you know. I mean, what happens when you drop ammunition on a village? What do you think really happens?
Carpet bombing, you know.
I mean, we are involved in operations in other countries that are doing that. But, I mean, that in itself is not the main, even the main thing. We are benefiting from a global order that involves incredible injustice. Incredible injustice. So this idea that yeah, look, everything is like okay for me right now. So I'm not going to like, you know, have like a view that's controversial.
Oh, yeah. And they'll get all hyped up and angry about some CEO getting, you know, $50 million payout. Yet we can spend millions and millions of dollars a day on a war in Afghanistan or Iraq and not even blink and think, yes, how proud we are. You know,
well, you know, that's interesting because that
little children,
that indignation that the average middle class person feels about the CEO, it's like that's something they can relate to, because it's like, you know, it's like they can imagine it being their boss at work or something, and so like they can get upset about that because it's in a framework that they relate to. But when it's like 50 people killed in a village in Afghanistan, just killed outright, blown up. Blown to smithereens, you know, little babies with their heads blown off.
Yeah.
That's so outside of their framework that they just go, oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah, oh, these people, then they don't have as feelings like we do, you know. They're not taxpayers. They're not important. You know? It's sick.
I don't know what it is. I hate to laugh at it. It's just there's something ridiculous about it. There's some absurd disconnect that occurs there. And
it's a disconnect. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
It's you know, the kids that you see with flies on their faces, you know, that's just an image. It's not real. It's not reality. Well, wake up, folks. It is reality. It is reality. Our soldiers are over there. They are basically minions for the American government and the American and the New World Order establishment, banking elite, to basically protect poppy crops. That's all that they're there for. That's all. And maybe just some sort of, you know, axis of good representation.
And yeah, I mean, the look, I don't know for sure. All I know is that Afghanistan has been producing a lot of opium. And that's confirmed, okay? The media's confirmed it. It was in the Sydney Morning Herald about a month ago.
Bumper crops.
Bumper opium crops. Okay, the Taliban, which were a very, very fanatically religious, fundamentalist Muslim group, completely suppressed it. They had their own wickedness, but they were actually totally against drugs, and they did suppress it. Now we see, for years now, since the Americans have been in charge of Afghanistan, the opium production has increased. Look, there's been, you know, we can just bog down in this subject of Afghanistan because, I mean, there's been various news reports in the last few days that the new government in Afghanistan wants to bring in all kinds of laws which are almost identical to the Taliban laws anyway. It's complete suppression of human rights, complete suppression of women's rights. You know what I mean? It's in the culture. It's coming back anyway. It's not as if it's been somehow... You know, the great cavalry, the American cavalry came and liberated that country and now they're free. No, they've got a particular culture that's evolved that way and it's like that now. It's not going to change quickly, okay? If anything, what's happened is going to push it back, in my opinion.
It absolutely does. You know, it absolutely does. All it's doing is pushing it back. You know, I mean, here we have, you know, I mean, I'm already starting to see on the media, on CNN, there's a promo. It's been being promoted for the last sort of month, and they go on about, can we trust the Taliban?
Really?
And you're sort of thinking, what do you mean? They're ruthless, disgusting, despicable. You know, they're like Nazis were.
Yeah.
You know, sick. And now we're talking about, oh, maybe we can, you know, trust them. Maybe we can talk to them. You know, let's blow the crap out of everyone and then let's talk with the old boss again.
Look, it's quite absurd. I mean, you know, what is a Taliban? I mean, what, you know, we get hooked on names and labels. I mean, basically, Taliban is just a label. There's people over there, guys. You know, I mean, there's just people like you and me. Some of them have been grouped together and are called a certain name. Mm. Some of them who were, you know, the ones who were called the Northern Alliance, or, you know, they had all these terms that they used, turned out that they were just as crooked and wicked as the Taliban. There's heaps of stories. I think we talked about it in our last show, how they were, you know, kidnapping goat herders and selling them to the Americans. And, you know, there's all this ridiculous corruption that always occurs with any invasion.
Mm.
I mean, I don't think that the construct of Taliban probably really means anything. I don't think it means anything at all. I think we've got to get beyond these labels and just start talking about people, you know?
Yeah. I agree. I saw it. Folks, if you can get your hands on a documentary that I saw last night on SBS called The Miscreants, I think it was, by George Gittos. I think he directed the...
Excellent. Yeah, he's a great independent filmmaker, that guy.
Yeah, I think he did the soundtrack to War as well. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I'm pretty sure. Anyway, this film last night was really, really got to the heart of the Afghan people and you know, on the border there, in the Forbidden Zone, they call it, sort of the northwest frontier of Pakistan. And it really showed these filmmakers that were trying to make films there, and they were getting banned by the Taliban, and these video shots were getting blown up, and instead they were popping up propaganda film stores with kids, like 12-year-old kids, cutting off people's heads. And it was really, it was quite disturbing, that side of it. But what was amazing was watching these people, and that's what is exactly right, Harold, these people trying to create art, trying to create films in this sort of environment where you've got the West trying to bomb the hell out of everyone, you've got the Taliban trying to bomb the hell out of everyone, and there's no real true direction. And no one really knows why all this is happening. And you've got these people in the middle of it all just trying to live. And it was a very, very amazing documentary, The Miscreants. I'd really recommend it.
Excellent.
To anyone.
Okay, we'll certainly Google that. Look, we're just going to take a quick pause here, and then we'll be moving on with some more stories. So just hang on tight, and we'll be right back. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths, and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia. www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free. Okay, we are back with Truth News Radio Australia with your hosts Harrowood Fenton and Josh Jackson. Okay, we are moving on. Now, we've got a few really important things to cover tonight, and I want to quickly move on to talk about the groundbreaking, earth-shattering, amazing new paper that's been released from the Journal of 9/11 Studies. It's now published in a peer-reviewed journal.
Yeah.
And the title of that story is... The active thermitic material discovered in dust from the 9/11 World Trade Center catastrophe. This paper conclusively shows the presence of unignited aluminothermic explosives in dust samples from the Twin Towers, whose chemical signature matches previously documented aluminothermic residues found in the same dust samples. The present review of the paper and related research is intended to summarize those findings for the non-technical reader. I am actually quoting to you, sorry, I'm quoting to you from an article which was published by Jim Hoffman, which is currently published on 9/11 Oz. I've got a whole mixture of articles here on this topic. the actual title of the published article is Active Thermitic Material Discovered in Dust from the 9/11 World Trade Center.
I mean, folks, this is amazing news. This is this is, as John put it, John Bursell, this isn't just a smoking gun. This is the gun in the hand. This is just everything. I mean, here we have explosive material found in the dust, and heaps of it. Heaps
indeed
of little red bits of flaky nanothermite, which you can take into a lab, unexplode it, and still explode the stuff. Still light it up. I mean, this is amazing. This is it. And if anyone still doubts that 9/11 wasn't an inside job, read this paper. It's a bit dry. It's totally scientific, but far out. This is it. If any of your friends think, what a conspiracy nutcase, just send them that. Just read it. Before you say one more word to me, just read that.
Yeah, look, I'll just read to you a few small excerpts from Jim Hoffman's article, which is, again, a summary of this highly technical article. It's all really quite important. And, you know, even if you think you know this, it's important to understand it, because it's not, you don't necessarily know. You know, you've heard some of this information, but it's important to get back again to the core scientific evidence that we're looking at here. Because remember, this is science. Science is not about politics. Science is not about ideology. Science is not about dogma. This could be refuted one day. Someone could come along and say, I disagree with all this information. Here's my study. And unless you really can engage with the evidence here that's being presented, how can you engage with a refutation? So, but of course, you know, I'm not a chemist. I'm not a scientist. Neither is Josh. That's not the point here. The point is to understand that there is an argument, and that argument is based on evidence. Okay, so I'll just read to you a few excerpts here from the really excellent article that Jim Hoffman put together. Aluminothermics. Aluminothermic is a term that is a combination of aluminium and thermic, so it means hot aluminium, or aluminium at high temperatures, okay? Aluminothermic reactions are a class of energy-releasing oxidation-reduction chemical reactions in which aluminium, that's American for aluminium, okay, reduces the oxide of metal, such as iron. Okay, so by saying that, it reduces the oxide of metal. In other words, it causes an oxidation reduction chemical reaction, which is a conversion of elements from one state to another, correct?
Mm.
Okay.
Yep.
He has in brackets here, stealing its oxygen. There is actually a movement of an oxygen atom from one molecular configuration to another molecular configuration. That is what happens in an oxidation reduction reaction. Aluminothermics range from low-tech preparations that take seconds to react and therefore release nearly all their energy as heat and light, to advanced engineered materials with accelerated reaction rates that yield explosive powers similar to conventional high explosives. Backers of the official account of 9/11, including NIST officials, have dismissed evidence that aluminothermics were used to destroy the World Trade Center skyscrapers, claiming that thermite's slow reaction rate makes it an unsuitable tool for demolishing buildings. Despite repeated requests by scientists and researchers to address the potential role of advanced aluminothermics with high explosive power, officials have refused to acknowledge such materials. Okay, now the point here is that this scientific investigation has confirmed the presence of high-tech nanothermite materials in the dust. And we're talking about absolutely tiny microscopic samples that were scooped up from the dust and were analyzed under an electron microscope.
Do they know where this... I mean, there's only a few labs in the world that could actually create this stuff. Do they know, Harold, where it came from yet?
Okay. One thing that we do know is that one of the leading organizations involved in developing nanothermites was actually, believe it or not, NIST. The same organization that was in charge of the investigation. It's incredible. Okay. Now, I'm going to just read to you from another article, which was actually published in a mainstream news article in the United States, DeseretNews.com. And this is on a more, you know, it's a bit easier to read and follow, okay? For several years, Stephen Jones has theorized that prepositioned explosives, not fires from jet fuel, caused the rapid symmetrical collapse of the two World Trade Center buildings, plus the collapse of a third building, WTC-7. The newest research, according to the journal authors, shows that dust from the collapsing towers contained a nanothermite material that is highly explosive. Although the article draws no conclusions about the source and purpose of the explosives, Jones has previously supported a theory that the collapse of the towers was part of a government conspiracy to ignore warnings about 9/11, to ignore warnings about the 9/11 terrorists so that the attack would propel America to wage war against Afghanistan and Iraq. The next step, Jones said in a phone interview on Monday, is for someone to investigate who made the stuff and why it was there. So just to get back to your question, Josh,
yeah.
This paper is not addressing the question of the origin of this material. That is something that still has to be sorted out. Mm-hmm. But from what I have read and studied, one of the leading researchers in this is its government and its NIST is involved in it. But that is
unbelievable,
not to say,
folks. Yes. This is so unbelievable. Words cannot describe. Here you have the body that is investigating the collapse of Building 7 and coming up with rubbish answers like thermal expansion, meaning that, you know, buildings expand to a point where they just collapse in their own footprint, and giving an answer, that's why Building 7 collapsed. Here we have that company who also creates... Jeez, Harold, this is unbelievable.
It's like everything to do with this subject. It's very, very messy. And let's just continue. Just a little bit more background about the origin, the provenance of the dust. The dust was collected by individuals who have supplied it to Stephen Jones. One sample was from a man who had swept up a handful of dust from the Brooklyn Bridge while he was walking. It was therefore definitely not contaminated by steel cutting or cleanup operations. Another man collected dust from his apartment, 5 blocks from the World Trade Center. There was a layer about an inch thick on a stack of folded laundry. Okay, so, there's a provenance to this dust, and the people who collected it, you know, they can be interviewed. None of this is coming from some sort of like totally secretive sources. Everything here is open to criticism and investigation. Now, in the dust, red gray chips, averaging in size between 0.2 and 0.3 millimeters, were found in all four dust samples. The chips were then analyzed using scanning electron microscopy and other high-tech tools. The red layer of the chips...
I love a good microscopy.
Oh, look, absolutely. And you know, you can't really argue with the electron microscope, can you?
No. It's I mean, these images look amazing as well.
They certainly do. The red layer of the chips, according to the researchers, contains a highly energetic form of thermite, while normal thermite, a mixture of finely granulated aluminum and an oxide of metal, can be incendiary. A superthermite is explosive. He says there is no benign explanation for the thermite in the WTC dust. So, we've got an investigation here which has led to an analysis, and the analysis has confirmed that this material is not... this is not something that would just occur by accident. You know, this is not like it was in the dust because the dust was a mixture of stuff that came out of the buildings with airplane stuff and aluminium, blah, 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 blah. Okay, what they're saying here is that this highly unique, highly energetic, unreacted material, it's exotic, okay? It has an exotic origin. But they're not saying what it is. But we know that the buildings were blown up for other reasons, okay? And there's been all this other research which has been done to show that the buildings would not have collapsed in the way they did without an extra input of energy, okay? Because you need that extra input of energy.
Thermite isn't some natural thing. It's been engineered. It's you don't just find thermite in dust.
And look, we are going to be actually interviewing on this show some of the authors of this article who will be able to answer some of the questions that are on my mind. And, for example, I'm pretty sure that they've actually tested some of this and they've actually been able to ignite it.
Yeah, I've seen it. They showed it at the conference that they played at the film screening at the Man Theatre.
Yes.
There in Sydney. And they actually showed some of the them igniting some of these chips.
So
it was phenomenal. I had to pick it off the ground.
It is highly reactive material, which, where does that come from? I mean, how does that come out of concrete? You know, and these are some of the questions that I'm going to be proposing to Frank Legg and Stephen Jones, if I can get him on the show, because we need to also be able to convince and explain to the general public that this is not something that could occur from concrete out of a building. I mean, you don't get highly reactive materials like that, unreacted, you know, sitting in concrete. Because I mean, that in itself would be extraordinary, wouldn't it? Imagine if the concrete of an average building had super thermite in it. That would not be a particularly encouraging piece of information.
Oh, well, you know, so people can bring it down within minutes of thinking, let's bring this building down.
Yeah, yeah.
Some future building that can just be brought down any minute.
And look, folks, this is not a subject to be glossed over, brushed into the corner, forgotten about, minimized. And here again, I'm just going to reassert the absolute power, the absolute genius and power of the scientific method and rational thought here, okay?
Yeah.
Because we are not talking about, a prophecy. We are not here talking about, you know, tea leaf reading. As much as all those things might be interesting, I'm not totally against them. I'm not saying that prophecy is wrong. I'm not saying tea leaf reading is wrong. It may have amazing insights. However, what we're doing here, right, is that we can actually, everything that we're saying here can be put through questioning, reproduction, testing, so that it goes into, it's like Galileo, you know? This, to me, this is exactly the same situation as Galileo versus the Catholic Church.
Mm.
And who won in the end, okay? Galileo won in the end, okay? But it wasn't he personally. He didn't personally win. What won was the truth won out. Okay.
The ideas.
Yeah, and the inexorable quality of being able to lay out the truth in a way that matches all your observations in the best possible way.
and scientific scrutiny.
Yeah. And that's why, you know, at Truth News, we really do stipulate the importance of adhering to these principles and not sort of mixing in everything else with everything else, which is what I think, unfortunately, a lot of people do when they are, when they perceive themselves to be sort of a little bit on the edge of society, and they perceive that there are some things they know that other people don't know, but then they often mix in a lot of other things which are actually their own superstitions or their own, you know, personal prejudices, and they mix it all together. We're trying not to do that. I'm trying not to do that.
Okay. Well, look, I tinker on the edges.
Look, I tinker till morning, noon, and night, and I'm the first one to come on here and say to you that I've got very strong opinions. Okay, and you know, my opinions are my opinions, and my attitudes are my attitudes, and you're welcome to actually look at what I'm saying here and thread through it.
Folks, at the end of the day, we're just wanting to get the truth. And the best method we have for the truth is scientific method. And look, amazing people like Dr. Frank Legg, Dr. Stephen Jones are putting their entire life work right now into finding the truth. And papers like this are so important, and I look up to these people, extraordinary people. So
they are heroes. I mean, because they're doing what needs to be done for us all to get out of the mess we're in.
They're risking ridicule. They've been fired from their jobs. You know, Frank Legg hasn't. He was retired, but you know, Dr. Stephen Jones was. Yeah, and he's coming out on top now because, like Galileo, the truth is standing up to scrutiny.
Yeah, so, get onto the internet, get onto Google, research these articles, the Thermite article, research the Red Chips, research, have a read of Jim Hoffman's article. We'll be putting links to these on the Truth News notes. And we'll now move on because we've got a lot more to talk about.
Subscribe to Truth News by going to truthnews.com.au and clicking the RSS feed, or using iTunes to catch the show every week.
Okay, we're back with Truth News Radio Australia, and I'm Herewood Fenton. I'm here with Josh Jackson tonight. And our next story for tonight that we'll be considering is one from Tuesday, April 7. And this was a mega story. And it really is actually, in terms of Australian news, quite... It's a big deal, folks.
It's still playing out now.
Yeah. And I'll read you just a headline here from the ABC. Rudd redraws broadband landscape. The federal government has scrapped the controversial broadband tender process and will instead form a new public-private company to build a national network, Prime Minister Kevin Rudd has announced. Mr. Rudd said that the new fibre to the home network would take 8 years to build and cost $43 billion and give 90% of Australian households download speeds 100 times faster than they currently experienced.
Or would that be, 500 times faster than my friends on dial-up?
Yeah, if it's dial-up, yeah, you've really got to multiply that again. Unveiling the surprise plan today, Mr. Rudd described the scheme as the single largest infrastructure project in the country's history and said it would create 25,000 jobs a year during construction, with 37,000 in the busiest year over 8 years. Now, right now I just want to stop, pause, and I want to give you my opinion. Okay, this is my opinion. I think this is the most outrageous and obnoxious waste of public money that I have ever seen in my life.
That has ever walked the land.
Why am I saying that? I'll tell you why. I live in a city where we have trains that constantly get derailed because the tracks aren't properly maintained and they run constantly off their timetable because the whole system is so poorly maintained. We have a city choked with buses that are the most ridiculous and an absurd form of transport because they... I don't know if you know much about Sydney, Josh. I mean, you live in Sydney. I presume you do. But if you've actually been unfortunate enough to rely on the bus system in Sydney, what you'll know is that the buses in Sydney work on a kind of conga line methodology. Is that all the buses run in a conga line, okay? Nose to bum, nose to bum, nose to bum.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
With really squeaky brakes.
Oh, squeaky is hardly, and that's only just the beginning of it.
Screaming.
Because along with that squeaking, there comes the incredible deceleration and acceleration that occurs when a grumpy bus driver applies, brakes or acceleration. And there's been all kinds of stories from a few years ago where old, pensioners were getting their heads bashed when the bus driver hit the brake too suddenly and they all whack their heads forward, bang onto the chair in front. And I mean, it's happened to me. It can be very dangerous. Okay. Now, the buses, right, they run in this conga line formation. And what this means is that there'll be like 10 buses all together, nose to bum, right?
Yeah.
And then there'll be a giant gap of 20 minutes where there's no buses. That's the way it works, folks.
That's great when that happens.
That is the way it works. It happened to me today because I needed to get a bus from the city down to Glebe and back again. And the same thing happens. Like there's this giant sort of – because the buses tend to all clump. They just clump together because that's sort of the nature of it because they're these huge things, right? Yeah. And they tend to get clumped. And the one at the front has all the people in it. It'll be absolutely packed like sardines, right? Then the one behind it will be like half empty. And then there'll be all these empty buses all together in a convoy. Okay, why am I even talking about this? Because I'm saying, why aren't we spending money on public transport? Because it's so outrageous. Why do we live in this horribly dysfunctional city that doesn't have trains that run on time, that has these horrible, noisy, noise-polluting, inefficient buses that spew carbon dioxide?
I've got a better idea. This is typical when you get violence to pull money into a monopoly, to monopolize things like public transport. So now we have a monopolized public transport system, which is totally, just terrible because it's a monopoly and no one really cares and there's no competition.
Yeah, so, it's a government monopoly.
Yeah, a government monopoly where there's no competition. The money's been stolen from you and me. I'd just rather that they'd not tax me. And I'd, have a lot more money to spend on some good private transport or private public transport.
Well, instead of that, Josh, they're going to tax you more.
Yeah.
And they're going to create a government monopoly on the internet now.
The internet, that'll be great. And do you know what else they'll do? They'll probably have this is my opinion.
Yeah.
I really feel that they are doing this because they need to pass some sort of paper through the government to say we need money for this internet filter, for these internet filters, because it's far too hard to do ad hoc, trying to add on to the old network, which was amazing and dynamic and organic. Instead, they need to build it up from scratch so they can thoroughly spy on every single packet of your information. Now, you know, I have no real grounding for this opinion, and but it seems very suspect.
Well, I find it hard to imagine why else they're even doing it.
My internet's amazingly fast. I mean, I pay a bit for it, but it's, you know, I can watch all the high quality videos on YouTube. I can I download all real time, you know, megs and megs. I mean, far out. Some of the stuff I download goes so quick. I mean, a whole gig can take, you know, 10 minutes of my time. Yeah. Ooh, 100 times faster. Well, look, if there is a definite need for 100 times faster, why isn't the private sector coming along and doing it for us? Why isn't the private sector? Because, folks, it's not profitable. So what's happening? Your money that's been taken from you is being invested in a non-profit, a money-losing concept of a national broadband scheme when, at the end of the day, it's probably old technology anyway, which is going to get superseded by wireless networks anyway. We're not going to see these underground cables dug around everywhere and, ooh, this is the new thing. No, this is all in the name of trying to build a Internet 2 style Big Brother elite.
Well, let's just talk about this for a minute, the Internet 2, because it looks to me as if this new initiative would actually supersede the idea of an Internet filter, because we're really talking now about, well, they're talking about rebuilding the core infrastructure. If they rebuild the core infrastructure, then the concept of net neutrality is one which, unless it is core to what they're going to do, then it is quite easy for them to build prioritized internet access into the system, which means that, you know, certain networks, certain, you know, big players will have the lion's share of the bandwidth, and the elements that are not, I guess it will probably, I mean, I'm going here on what's already been discussed and already been mooted as a plan, is that the internet pipe becomes auctioned off, so that, you know, access to premium speeds is something that comes at a higher price than, say, access to a lower grade speed.
Well, this plan, not only are we paying for it through our teeth, $42 billion, but this is the end of the internet as we know it, if we let this go ahead, because this will mean a homogenized, government-controlled internet, which is basically, like you said, private slash government partnership, which is basically another form of fascism.
Unless net neutrality is actually core, unless that is enforced as a core policy, then we are doomed. And, you know, unless
policies
we have a
get overturned.
Unless policies we have a movement to enforce that. You see, people need to understand the threat here.
Yeah. I mean, shows like you and like this one will get so little bandwidth.
Yeah, whereas, I mean, what we're benefiting from now is an infrastructure where every communication on the internet is treated equally. So if you access a very, you know, minor website that's just somebody's personal blog, it doesn't get less bandwidth than accessing news.com.au. Or, you know,
it doesn't take the side streets to get to you.
Yeah, it's like
it takes the same superhighway.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can get your own little private blog can work just as well on the internet as the major news portal, and that's an amazingly wonderful thing. It's so very important, but that is a result of the infrastructure that was put in place decades ago that we're currently the benefit of. But if they rip it all out now and rebuild it, what is the chance that they're going to put all that back in the way it was?
Yeah. And this is another way. I mean, Rudd doing this, right, is another way to price people out of conventional internet because what you'll get here is, A, we pay for it.
Yeah. Right? And the price will go up dramatically. Taxes, right? The price will go up by a huge amount.
Huge. I mean, a lot of my friends, you know, can't even, they're still on broad, on dial-up. They're still on dial-up, folks. Dial-up. Do you think they could? No, and this is no joke. I mean, a lot of people in Australia are still on dial-up. Now, do you think they could really afford the next level of internet, which is way? I mean, a lot of people can't afford the sort of plans that I'm. I mean, I'm on a very good plan, a very fast plan, and you know, I'm paying sort of $79 a month. A lot of people, you know, with families, can't afford that. That's a luxury.
Yeah.
Do you think they're really going to pay for this new amazing internet, which they've already paid for anyway, because they'll be paying through their taxes? And probably their children will be paying it off because it's a $42 billion investment.
Yeah.
Then they'll be paying a monthly fee on top of it. I mean, it's absolutely absurd. And this is another despicable, disgusting way of spending money, which is, you know, basically stolen from us.
And look, you know, it definitely feeds into the agenda for internet censorship. But I think that this would actually supersede the internet filter. I think this would give them a far more powerful tool for actually being able to control everything that goes through those pipes. And, you know, just on that note, I just want to recap, you know, some of my thoughts about the government's position on internet censorship. For those listening who, because I have been told by some people who are like friends of mine in the past that, yeah, they've been a little bit persuaded by the idea that, you know, oh, it's really important that you know, that the government does sort of take care of us, you know, and like the, you know, the dangers of these wicked websites and stuff, you know, must be taken into account.
You might see some sick images.
Now I had a video out a couple of days ago, and it was like an art house video. And it's actually what I would call, having watched it, extreme hardcore violent pornography. However, it was actually on the shelf and had reviews. I think it was probably the Cannes Film Festival, you know, something like that. You know, it definitely had that sort of quality about it, and it was reviewed as being a rather good quality, you know, drama thriller. The film was actually about the torture and murder of a husband and a wife and a child, and it depicted this in graphic detail, and in a way which was totally lacking. It wasn't like you know, Saw or Hostel or one of those things. It's like a horror film genre, so you know, oh, I'm watching a horror film, it's going to be, you know,
yeah, so let's not get it out, you know.
Yeah, yeah, it's like, know, it was sitting on the shelf as something that the family would get out, you know. It was in that section, and it was just so violent and so bloodthirsty, you know. I mean, there's one scene where this little kid gets his head blown off by a shotgun, and then the guy's
a little
laughing.
Kid.
Yes, 7-year-old gets his head blown off with a shotgun. And
yeah, and here we have a movie that's sitting on the shelf. It's anyone can watch it, and but Conroy's worried about the internet. You know,
I don't understand.
He's not
that
worried about these sick images. And you know, the other thing is, Harold, I watch television all the time, and these promos come on for CSI.
Yeah.
Who is this sick, disgusting murderer? You won't believe the sick way he kills, and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, just bombards me. I'm not, you know, yeah, I can choose not to watch CSI, but I can't choose not to watch the promo because it just comes at me like a freight train, knocking me in the head.
Yeah.
And you know, and shows me these graphic, sick images with these voiceovers, which are so sinister and dark. And little kids, I mean, I've seen promos like that right through Australian Idol and stuff where kids are watching it, you know, and you're sort of thinking, Conroy is so worried about the government, so worried about our, you know, taking care of us, yet we get bombarded with this sick imagery. And look at, like you brought it up, Saw and these sort of despicable, disgusting.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they are also horrendous things. I mean, all these horror movies where that, you know, that it seems to have become more and more standard now in horror movies to just have people being tortured?
Yeah, oh, just, you know, that's entertainment now, you know. Yeah. You know, we can sit back with a pizza and a beer, first watch the news where we see some Afghan farmers getting shot in the head, and then we watch Saw, great night in. You know, it's, I mean, it's it, we're turning into a sick society. And Conroy's there going, ooh, we better, you know, the last pinnacle of freedom, of true free speech to try and fix society and spread truth, which is the internet, this most amazing thing that has ever dawned the earth in terms of freedom of information, is about to get crushed by some idiot masquerading around in some sort of a outfit to help us all, some sort of a you know, godly manner of protection for us all. I mean, it's demented, and people are actually buying it.
Yeah.
People are actually buying the thing that thinking that the government wants to help, you know, help us be more moral.
It is, and look, we're going to continue to talk about this on this show relentlessly. We are not going to bend over. Okay, we're not going to just acquiesce and say to ourselves, "Oh, it's all too hard. We've given up." We're just going to relentlessly argue and talk about this. I don't care if it takes the rest of my life. I'm going to keep doing this. I'm going to keep telling the truth. I'm going to keep advancing the view of civilized mentality, civilized society against the backward, regressive, feudal, whatever it is that seems to be, you know, coming upon us. I'm just going to keep advancing the truth and the light.
And I hope you listeners do too. You know, get on the internet, start just shout and yell. Get out in the streets, shout and yell. You know, have a say. Pull back your word. You know, get. I mean, pull back your energy, your drive for freedom.
Absolutely, absolutely. On that note, we're just going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au. And may the truth set you free.
A little over a month ago, I had a call. It was like the 1 billionth call from a woman who asked me about FEMA prison camps. And I said to my producer, I said, can we just please debunk this or prove it to be accurate? I kind of snapped on the lady because, honestly, I'm sick of seeing the emails about the FEMA camps. I got something from friends that was about Nancy Pelosi, and it was completely bogus. Look, let's just stick to the facts. There's enough truth out there that pisses people off. We don't need all the lies. The basic idea is that FEMA is setting up evil concentration camps to be used against U.S. citizens. Now, along with the 9/11 truthers, this is one of the most pervasive conspiracy theories on the internet because it comes with supposed video. There is the video proof right there. That video now has had well over a million views on YouTube. So we set out to get the truth. And quite honestly, I don't believe that there are FEMA concentration camps. I think that sounds kind of nuts. But if there are, I'll show them to you. If there aren't, I'll show that to you. We set out to get the truth on it. And after our initial research, I came in and I said, wait a minute. We can't debunk this? Well, no. I thought we had done enough research to get the video. I wanted to line up video side by side. Apparently, there hadn't been any debunking done at all, and there was no video side by side. Well, predictably, the media started claiming that somehow or another I believe in these conspiracy theories, even though I said on the air a million times I don't, and I've said that for years. Not to mention the entire time they were running their mouths, we were working with an independent group to debunk them or to prove them. I also said that on the air over and over and over again. But who listens to context? The one guy that can that can actually set the record straight here is James Meggs. He's the editor-in-chief of that independent group I was talking about, otherwise known as Popular Mechanics. They did an incredible job in the writing of the definitive debunking of the 9/11 conspiracy that everybody knows now is not true because of Popular Mechanics, except Rosie O'Donnell.
I'm just going to pause there. I've been playing to you a clip from a recent Fox News piece by Glenn Beck. And for those who are following this whole saga, it began about a month ago when Glenn Beck came on the Fox News channel saying that he had discovered, you know, that the so-called FEMA prison camps were real, that he couldn't debunk it, and that he was going, that he'd been studying it and his team had been researching it for several days. And this was about the 3rd of March, I think this came on. And he said that he would be doing a whole piece on it the next day on the television.
Yeah.
Now, instead of actually doing that, he came on the television again the next day and said, guess what? You know, I'm not doing the show now because it's all rubbish. It's all lies, and there was no story. Okay, but the interesting thing about it is that, you know, when he first brought it up, it was like one of those kind of like couch sessions where all the newsreaders are sitting on a couch and they're having their discussions about stuff, and you know,
it was more unscripted, kind of.
It's sort of seemingly unscripted, you know, but. You know, he says on there that they've done their research and they're doing a story and it's going to be presented. Now, I don't know, Josh, you work for a television, you know, you're involved in broadcast. I don't think that things like that happen to that degree of haphazardness. I mean, I think if a television channel is doing a story and they actually dedicate resources and time to researching that story, and then their anchor says on live television that they're going to be presenting that story, I don't think that they just then go around and turn around and say, oh, we're not doing that story because there wasn't any information there. That's not the way it works.
No, I think Glenn Beck, he's a funny one. He is a total sellout. Let's just say that. He's a total sellout, He believes in liberty. He deep inside his little minuscule heart, he believes in liberty. He believes in this and that. But he's been totally sold out, totally bought and paid for. And so he comes out with these things like, oh, what? There's these FEMA camps and far out. You know, you see like little bursts of what he really wants to say, and then something behind him or something despicable in himself just starts to sort of refute everything that he wants to say is true. And it's happened over and over again. He sort of flip-flops around the place all the time. For instance, Alex, you know, he said that all Ron Paul people, you know, Ron Paul's full of it and all this and that. Now he's Ron Paul's best friend. You know, he's always having him on the show and talking to him, and you know, it's this sort of flip-flopping nature that Glenn Beck has about him. And this is what happened on the couch. I mean, on the couch, it was like a Today-style show. He was saying, yep, definitive proof. I thought we could debunk it, but we just can't debunk this thing. We just can't. There are FEMA camps, and, you know, if you better watch out. If you think this government's turning to, you know, a dictatorship, you better watch out.
Yeah.
And then the next day he comes on this radio show with this sort of absolutism about his opinion that everyone that thinks this is around is ridiculous. Well, hang on, Glenn, you thought it was true only a day before or 2 days before. And now you're saying, oh, everyone that thinks it is ridiculous. And, you know,
well, I tell you what, Josh, I don't know what's behind that, but all I can say is that the effect of that on the average person will be to totally confuse them. Now, that may or may not be the intention of Rupert Murdoch, but it's very, very, very well achieved. If that, you know, regardless of whether that's the intention or not, that's the outcome. And it just makes me wonder why, you know, because this is, you know, it's a particular question that's been of concern to people, because in the United States, with the Patriot Act and with all of the other losses of basic civil liberties and the powers that are granted to FEMA under emergency situations, that the possibility that people may be put in internment camps is something to be really quite concerned about.
Well, it's already happening. People are getting put in camps already, because there's these tent cities springing up,
yeah,
where thousands of people are living in tents, and they're basically saying, the government's coming along and saying, it's actually a lot safer if you come and live behind barbed wire. And they're putting these people into camps.
So this is happening in California?
Yeah, California, Schwarzenegger's behind. You know, this is happening, folks. It is.
Although it's been claimed that this is just a benign, you know, arrangement. Like they're saying, well, you just stay here for your safety and sort of.
No, it's always for your safety. But
I'm not sure whether it's actually. I mean, are they actually being locked in or not? At this stage, I don't know.
The point is, these things are real. They're there.
Yeah.
Glenn Beck saying, "Oh, are they real? I don't believe in them."
Well, let's continue with this video, because he claims here to have like conclusively debunked it, and you'd probably need to watch the video to get the full effect here, and we'll have this
on the show notes.
Yeah, James, so I'll just continue with the
same
the
FEMA
here.
Camps. Okay, let's just start with the easy stuff here. There are, and just want to collapse this as quickly as possible. There are things that, yes, FEMA has a right to have camps and they could do things to help people. And if you wanted to go down the crazy road of, but they could be turned into, they actually could be. But there's like a million other steps that have to happen.
That's correct. And what we did was we looked into these claims. You know, you can't go and visit every one of the 600 sites that some of these conspiracy theorists claim. So we started looking at the ones that are most popular on the Internet.
Okay. And let's show the video. First, show me the video that is on the Internet. This is one of the so-called concentration camps, or this one's actually, go ahead, show it. I guess a death camp. Do we have it? Okay, we don't have it yet. I can't keep going because this is kind of built around the video. That was the reason why we waited. There it is.
This small building is the only way into a particular fenced area. Inside this building, we see more of the motion-activated detectors, electronic turntables.
Okay, there's no sound. How come I'm hearing the sound here, Frank? Okay, this is something where they're showing a so-called concentration camp. These are turnstiles. This is in a secure behind the fence. I don't know how they got this video when it was behind the fence, but they went in and got this video. You recognize this, or you searched for it, right? And what did you find?
Well, it's not very hard to find. Like so many of these things, the truth is actually fairly evident. This is an Amtrak repair facility in Beech Grove, Indiana. The woman who made this video initially claims that it's some kind of American Auschwitz, and they've outfitted buildings with gas, and they've got these strange turnstiles. In fact, it is a repair facility. We set a crew there the other day, and we got
footage inside. Is this your video?
Yes. So initially, they had some old buildings that were boarded up that have since been knocked down. But we also went inside the other buildings, and sure enough, what did we find? They're repairing trains in there.
Well, trains, I believe Auschwitz had trains. I'm just saying, Jim.
Well, once you go down that road, you can't really, if somebody's convinced, wants to be convinced of that, you can't really debunk that.
Do we have the video with audio? Because if we don't, I don't really care. The video with the audio about the boarded up buildings with the gas chambers. Do you
just going to pause it there. Up till this point, what we've been listening to is James Meigs with some video footage re-examining the question of this one particular location.
Yeah, one location.
That's been claimed in that video, which apparently was made more than 10 years ago. Now, it just seems to me there's a huge amount of problems with the quality of James Meigs' research techniques there. I mean, you know, because like in the video, and I have watched the one that he's referring to there, and it goes into a lot of detail, and it actually shows you the barbed wire pointing inwards. Okay. Now, if this was just a place where people were working on trains, why would they have barbed wire pointing inwards? And that is not even addressed by James Meigs. It's ignored. But this is typical of what he does, and we've seen it with the 9/11 stuff, is that he'll find one or two things. But the really funny thing is that he himself comes across as being this genuine, thoughtful person. And then he says about, say, 9/11, you know, oh, there's one or two things that are true, but everything else is false. Whereas, in fact, he's the one who's telling you one or two things are true. I can hardly even say this. It's so stupid. You know what I mean? Everything is the mirror opposite. He's actually telling you one or two things that are true amid a sea of complete obfuscation and outright fibs. Okay. But in the course of saying that, he's saying that that's what we're saying, you know, that us, you know, and I'm you know, saying, you know, we're part of the conspiracy theory. Okay. So, like, you know, he's saying that the conspiracy theorists are telling you a few things right and lying to you. But that's what he's doing. Get it?
It's just beautifully Orwellian.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
God. And then in addition to that, to the icing on the cake is this sarcastic banter they've got going between each other.
Yeah.
You know, he's talking about Auschwitz and gas chambers and, you know, kind of like smirking, you know, this kind of...
Yeah. Oh, Auschwitz had trains.
yeah, this kind of smirking schoolboy, you know, look.
It really writes off any sort of, you know, true investigative journalism, doesn't it? I mean, when people say that there's concentration camps being built, it's not lighthearted. It's not, ha-ha. Yeah, these are serious claims, and serious claims should be taken seriously. And there's hundreds of these things, and it's not.
And this is one installation, That's all they've investigated, one spot.
And FEMA has such extraordinary powers now after 9/11 and after the Katrina hurricane, have such amazingly full on. They have more power than the CIA. You know, they really are so, so powerful, and a lot of money behind them.
Yeah, they basically have martial law powers. In a state of emergency, they can shoot you. You know, and that's what they did in New Orleans. They shot people, you know. I'll just finish this video because it's got some other pretty extreme and ridiculous statements in it. So I'll just we'll just get to the end of this.
In yet another fenced area, we see a large warehouse building at the end with the electronic turnstiles in front of it.
Okay. That they were putting gas heaters of some sort in there.
Right. And what we found out is, first of all, one of those buildings has been knocked down. The other ones were upgraded. Their heating system was obsolete. And more than 15 years ago, they upgraded them to gas heat so they could work on the trains.
This is these videos, they're not new. Everybody is saying, oh, this is an Obama thing. I thought this was a Bush thing because of Halliburton and everything else. But that's not even true.
No, this video actually dates from about 1995. But like so many of these conspiracy theories, it gets recut and re-edited and circulated around the internet. So some people who are looking at it have no idea what the original source was.
Okay. So the turnstiles are there they were there. They're not there anymore?
Right. The turnstiles were just ordinary subway turnstiles that would be familiar to anyone who's ridden the subways in New York. And they were used just to clock in and out their employees. Now they've replaced them with small kiosks that have time clocks.
Who is the woman voicing this?
Her name's Linda Thompson. And
now, I'd just like to pause there because there is something totally ridiculous about what he just said, okay? Because what everyone has said about these so-called FEMA prisons is that they are empty, is that there is no one there. Now, he is claiming that this was just an ordinary workplace where there were workmen coming and going. Do you really think that's what that woman in that particular video was filming? I mean, it's quite clear and I've seen a few of them, is that there are these empty, disused places that are all set up that have no one in them. That's the whole point. If it was just a place where people were working on trains, then the whole context of that video would have to be, you'd have to say, completely deceptive, wouldn't you? You'd have to say, well, she was just lying, you know. Mm. It's like she went down to Central Railway and shot some video there.
But look, this is absurd. Here's someone coming out in 2009.
Yeah.
And talking about trying to debunk a video made in 1995.
Yeah.
What an idiot.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking
that's irrelevant.
Really new. I mean, these camps are very, very new. They're popping up over the last 2-3 years.
Yeah. I mean, that particular video has circulated a lot on the internet. And for all I know, it may be fake. I mean, that one video might not be real. I don't even know. I don't care. But that video is not what all this hinges on.
It's just absurd. Glenn Beck, mate, he really needs to look in the mirror, you know.
But this gets worse. I'll just finish this off now.
Militia movement, and she made a number of videos.
Wait, this is the militia movement that Timothy McVeigh was involved with.
That's right. Yes. Okay. And not to necessarily tie her to that, and yet at one point, even many of her fellow people in the militia movement started to move away from her a little bit when she recommended that some of her followers should march on Washington and start executing senators. So, you know,
she was too extreme for militia members.
Apparently.
Yeah, apparently. Okay.
And yet you'll see a video made by someone like that embraced by...
And stop it right there.
This is pure propaganda, isn't it?
This is them turning into conspiracy theorists.
Yeah, yeah.
This is them putting, you know, points together, starting to, oh, well, she was part of a militia group, so she was... I mean, this is exactly opposite of everything, like you said before. I mean, this is absurd.
It's hearsay speculation. I mean, it's quite clear he said he doesn't even know that that's true. You know, it's pure propaganda, just designed to the whole effect of what he's saying here is to muddle your mind and to make you totally confused and very, you know, wary even of people who talk about FEMA camps now. You know, if you watch this sort of thing,
They debunked a video made in 1995.
Yeah, yeah.
People from all over the political spectrum.
I'll just
really
finish off
what
here.
The source is, or without checking out if it's remotely accurate.
Okay, one last question. I want to show you, take a look at this picture. Can you put this picture up, please? This is another one, and we're going to have you back tomorrow and just answer yes or no. Is this is what they claim, this is a concentration camp?
Yes, it is.
It is. Are there atrocities going on in that camp?
There's every reason to believe there is.
Is this a government-run concentration camp where atrocities, every reason to believe atrocities are going on?
Yes.
Now, tomorrow, I will ask him the one question that the conspiracy people never want to ask. And I'll ask it, and we will show you. Wait until you see this tomorrow. By the way, if you want to get all of the information...
Okay, well, that's the end of that story. I'm not no idea what that last little tantalizing thing there was. I think it could end up being...
Probably talking about Guantanamo Bay.
Or maybe North Korea.
Yeah.
It just looks like it's something to distract you. Probably nothing that's relevant.
Just another reason to turn off that television of yours.
Yeah, yeah.
Folks. It's really such filth. It's such despicable, transparent filth. It really is. It's just awful. It makes a mockery of journalism.
I mean, it's quite clear from what we've just listened to that is really an exercise in mind molding. That's all it is. And you could actually go right back to the beginning and look at all of the pieces that Glenn Beck did on this subject, and you could see the whole thing as it unfolds is just molding your mind into a state where you basically can no longer really take anything seriously on this topic.
Well, yeah, I mean, and also, you know, Popular Mechanics is, you know, pretty much the home of what's called yellow journalism.
Well, it's Hearst Publications, which, I mean, Hearst was closely allied with the US government in World War II, and I think possibly World War I as well. They were a publication, a publishing company that believed in promoting the government's views. And, you know, the government loved them for that reason. They worked very closely together. James Meggs is, and again, let me stress, this is my personal opinion, okay? I think he's the most disgusting person I've ever seen on the media. Yeah. I mean, I just mean that on a personal gut level. I mean, looking at the way he talks and the tone of his voice and the quality of his body language, he's totally creepy. Okay, He's just a very, very sleazy, weird, creepy person. And in addition to that, a lot of what he says doesn't ever add up. You know, I mean, we could go back to the stuff that he did for Popular Mechanics. He was the one who was going on about the structural damage to Building 7, supposedly, you know, and on about the, you know, the building being scooped out and all that rubbish, right? And then it turned out, and then finally NIST came out with a report. Guess what? None of that was in it, because there was no evidence that Building 7 had been scooped out or severely structural damage. Okay, that was all from James Meggs. I mean, not saying from him. It's just that's what he was relying on, and it was total rubbish. But then later on, that's sort of forgotten, because then this comes along with their new theory, you know, their new story. I mean, he has, and what I particularly found disgusting about the man was the way he condescended towards Dylan Avery in the debate back in 2006. That's almost 3 years ago now. But he engaged in a debate with Dylan Avery, actually, on Democracy Now, with Amy Goodman as the moderator. And it was just so obviously unfair. You know, here you have a 21-year-old, you know, made his first film, trying to break new information. You've got this middle-aged, sleazy guy just playing word games, you know.
Yeah, playing word games, big sort of, you know.
It was just appalling. It was a really sad affair, that particular debate. It made me very sad at the time. You know, this is all ongoing. You know, here we are, 3 years later, it's still this nonsense still happening. You know, changes of government. We've all had changes of government. Australia's got a new government. The United States has a new government. But it hasn't changed.
Look, the Hearst Publishing is, like I said before, the father of yellow journalism. And if you look at what yellow journalism is use of fake interviews, misleading headlines, pseudoscience, you know, a whole parade of false learnings from so-called experts. And that's from Wikipedia. When you look at Popular Mechanics, that's what they do.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the name of the game. And why is it that Glenn Beck gets him in to look at these, you know, FEMA camps, and then look at it so crappily? I mean, badly.
It's so shallow. I mean, how can he call that an investigation? It was like the whole piece went for about 6 minutes, and it was just one. They examined, you know, they went to one place, shot some video, made a few observations which weren't even backed up. I mean, you don't even know if what he's saying is true. How do we even know that it is the same place? We just, I mean, it's ridiculous. Yeah.
Well, it doesn't even matter if it was from a video from 2005. There's plenty of other footage of new FEMA camps. I mean, why did they choose that one? It's absurd. I mean, it's and honestly,
it really makes me think, and I think it will make any thinking person be much more really concerned that these FEMA camps are real. Because if they're going to this extent to try and debunk it in such a ridiculous way, it's beginning to look as if it really is real. And I, up till now, I really wasn't so sure. This has pushed me now. This has pushed me over the fence.
Again, folks, why would Glenn Beck the day before come on saying, my God, no, it wasn't the day before. I mean, it was a couple of days before saying, my God, I thought it was all bull, but it's all true. We can't debunk this thing. We're finding it everywhere, and we're going to show it to you tomorrow on tomorrow's show. We're going to show you all the proof, and then get on the next day and go, actually, we can't find any proof. It's all garbage. It's like the 9/11 truth movement. It's all, this guy is a total payout. He's been bought and paid for. He's a total fraud. Disgusting. Turn your TVs off. Let's move on.
Let's move on. In fact, let's move right on. I think it's probably we're way over time, and it's been an excellent show tonight. Folks, please write in, give us your thoughts, join the discussion, and keep up the good fight.
If you have any breaking news as well, send it through that you want us to cover.
Yeah.
We're as willing to look at stuff and, keep fighting the real truth. There'll be some, is it the 11th that's happening again this week, Herod?
Well, we do have the 11th of April coming up, but many individuals from the Australian Sydney group are actually not here. Some of them have gone down to Melbourne.
This is the 9/11 truth.
Yeah, indeed, yeah. And I mean, some of them have actually gone down to Melbourne. So I think it probably would be pretty quiet in Sydney.
All right. Well, peace out.
Yeah, peace out. And, stay tuned to Truth News. We'll be back.